Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, so if you use a phone, a bank account, rely on the power grid. Basically, if you're connected, you're living with the reality of cyber attacks. It's this constant background noise, almost.
It really is.
And we're not just talking small stuff. These are major incidents, constantly in the news, industrial scale threats.
Absolutely.
So our mission today is to maybe cut through some of that noise. We want to understand the core ideas, what is a cyber attack really, and just grasp the sheer scale of it based on the research you brought.
Right. And to start, I think we need to be really precise. The sources define a cyber attack as basically any unauthorized action against computer systems that compromises what security pros call the CIA triad.
Ah, the classic CIA triad: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. But
Right.
why frame it that way?
Well, it gets to the heart of what the attacker is trying to achieve. Confidentiality, stopping others from reading your data. Integrity, making sure the data isn't secretly changed.
Right.
And availability, ensuring you can actually get to your system and data when you need it. A successful attack hits at least one of those.
Got it.
But the key thing to understand, maybe the most important factor driving all this, is, well, inevitability.
Inevitability. That sounds a bit bleak.
It is, in a way. We depend on these incredibly complex interconnected systems now. Phones, cloud services, industrial controls.
Everything talks to everything else.
Exactly. And that complexity means pretty much all software has flaws, bugs. And some of those bugs can be exploited. It's almost baked into the system.
And that inherent vulnerability, that complexity, leads to some frankly shocking numbers when you look at the scale. This isn't minor league stuff.
Oh, absolutely not. The sources pointed out just in the first half of 2017, 2 billion data records were stolen or compromised.
2 billion in 6 months.
Yeah, it's hard to even picture that volume.
And the money involved,
Yeah.
especially with ransomware. We saw figures like $2 billion in ransomware payments in 2017.
That's right. And that was double the year before.
What?
And a big driver for that jump was the rise of cryptocurrencies. Made it easier to demand payments anonymously,
Right, harder to trace.
Much harder. And then, fast forward a bit, the pandemic hits. Everyone starts working remotely.
Suddenly, everyone's home network is part of the company network, essentially.
Exactly. More devices, more connections, often less secure ones. It just poured fuel on the fire. We saw a massive global spike in hacked and breached data because of it.
Okay, so flaws are inevitable because of complexity, but how do we know if a simple software bug is actually a security vulnerability? What's the difference?
That's a really important distinction. A bug might just make a program crash or give a wrong result. Annoying, but maybe not dangerous.
Okay.
It only becomes a vulnerability if that bug can be used to bypass security, to break one of those CIA principles, confidentiality, integrity, or availability.
Like using a bug to steal data or take over the system.
Precisely. And the most prized vulnerabilities, the really dangerous ones, are what we call 0 days.
0 days. Always sounds dramatic. What makes them so special?
It's all about timing and knowledge. A 0 day is a vulnerability that the software maker, the vendor, doesn't know about yet. Nobody in the public knows.
So, there's no fix available.
Exactly. 0 days for the defenders to prepare once it's used. An attacker with a 0 day exploit has a weapon that's basically guaranteed to work until it's discovered and patched. That's why they fetch such high prices on certain markets.
So the good guys are always playing catch up. And the sources mentioned a kind of messed up incentive structure here too, didn't they?
They did. Generally speaking, when a company's software vulnerability leads to a massive data breach or system failure for their customer, the software company itself isn't legally on the hook for all those costs.
So the company that got breached, or the individuals whose data was stolen, they bear the brunt.
Largely, yes. Which means there's less financial pressure on developers to invest heavily in making software super secure from the start. It's often cheaper and faster to ship code that might have flaws because the big costs of a breach fall elsewhere. It's an externality.
Which really leads us to this big shift in how organizations think about defense, right? If perfect security is, well, impossible or just wildly impractical, what do you do?
Yeah, the old way was all about trying to build impenetrable walls, detect intrusions, harden systems, stop everything from getting in.
Like a digital fortress.
Kind of, but the sources make it clear that approach just isn't cutting it anymore, especially against determined attackers. It's only partially effective.
So what's the alternative? This brings us to cyber resilience.
Exactly. Cyber resilience starts with a different assumption. assume the breach is going to happen. Maybe it already has.
Okay, that's a mindset shift.
It is. So the focus changes from preventing entry at all costs to protecting the most critical functions even during an attack. Hmm. How do we keep the essential business running when the bad guys are already inside the network?
So how does that work in practice? What are companies actually doing?
Well, it involves things like zero trust models. Basically, don't automatically trust anyone or anything on the network, even if they're already inside. Verify everything.
Makes sense.
Also, microsegmentation, breaking the network into tiny isolated zones. So if one part gets compromised, the damage doesn't spread easily.
Containing the blast radius, sort of.
Exactly. And crucially, really solid business continuity plans. How do you operate if System A goes down? Plus, the basics still matter hugely. Training users seriously, don't click that weird link patching systems diligently, and encrypting sensitive data. If they steal it but can't read it, it's less valuable.
Okay, good fundamentals.
Yeah.
Now, let's say an attacker does get through those initial layers.
Yeah.
How do they typically operate? The sources talk about this cyber kill chain. It sounds like a military thing.
It's a model, yeah, a step-by-step process attackers often follow. And it starts way before they actually hack anything. Step one is reconnaissance.
Spying.
Pretty much. Gathering information, checking websites, looking for employee info on social media, scanning the target's network for open doors, maybe trying some social engineering to get credentials.
Like figuring out who works in IT from LinkedIn.
Stuff like that, yeah. Once they've found a potential way in, a vulnerability, they move to step two, weaponization.
Building the weapon.
Right. They craft the exploit code specifically for that vulnerability and bundle it with their malware, the actual harmful program they want to run.
Then they have to get it there. Step three, delivery.
Delivery. And the sources are clear. The most common way is still phishing. Emails with dodgy links or attachments.
Still works surprisingly often.
It does. But also drive-by downloads. You just visit a compromised website and boom, the malware installs itself without you clicking anything else.
Scary.
And we shouldn't forget insiders. Sometimes an employee or contractor delivers the payload, maybe accidentally by plugging in a USB stick or sometimes maliciously.
Okay, so the weapon is delivered. Then step four, exploitation. That's the moment of impact.
That's when the malware actually runs, exploits the vulnerability, and usually sets up shop. Often it creates a backdoor.
Like leaving a hidden way back in for later.
Exactly. Gives them persistent access, remote control.
And finally, step five, persistence and activity. This is where they actually do whatever they came to do. What kind of things happen here?
Depends on the goal. If it's espionage, they might just sit quietly and eavesdrop. Very hard to detect.
Says watching.
Yeah. Or they could use the compromised machine as part of a botnet. Thousands of these zombie computers all controlled together.
What are botnets used for?
Launching huge denial of service attacks, DDoS, to overwhelm a target and knock it offline, sending massive amounts of spam. But the really big money makers now are ransomware, encrypting all your files and demanding payment to unlock them.
The nightmare scenario for businesses.
Totally. Or cryptojacking, secretly using your computer's power to mine cryptocurrency for the attacker. Slows your machine down, runs up your power bill.
This whole kill chain. It sounds very organized, professional almost.
Yeah.
So who are these attackers? Is the stereotype of the lone hacker in a basement totally wrong now?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, lone hackers exist, but the major threats we worry about, they tend to come from organized crime groups, often working like real businesses, or hacktivists with a political agenda. And of course, state-sponsored or state-affiliated groups.
Governments hacking each other or others.
Yes. But it's also crucial to remember, like we said with delivery, insiders often enable these attacks, even if unintentionally. Skipping a security step because it's faster, for example.
But the big shift, the really transformative thing the sources highlighted, is this idea of cybercrime as a service.
Right. This is huge. Criminal groups realized, hey, maybe developing these sophisticated attack tools is risky and using them is risky, but what if we just rent them out?
Like a software subscription, but for crime.
Exactly. They specialize. One group builds the ransomware, another builds the botnet, another finds the zero days. Then they offer these tools and services on the dark web. They make money more reliably with less direct risk.
So they're selling the weapons, not necessarily firing them themselves. Who's buying?
Well, worryingly, people who don't have the deep technical skills. You can literally rent a botnet to launch a DDoS attack. You can subscribe to a ransomware as a service platform.
So it lowers the barrier to entry for causing major disruption.
Mm.
You just need money, basically.
Pretty much. Cryptocurrency and a willingness to use these services, it democratizes cybercrime in a really bad way.
Okay, so we've got this vast, complex target landscape, sophisticated attackers, and now this whole service economy for crime tools. Let's talk about the impact, the harm. The source has had a pretty detailed breakdown.
Yeah, it goes way beyond just losing data. Obviously, there's digital damage, data destroyed, systems corrupted, but think about the economic losses.
Right, the cost to investigate, fix things, maybe regulatory fines.
Yeah.
Lost business while systems are down.
Huge costs.
Yeah.
And then there's potential physical damage.
How so?
Think about attacks on critical infrastructure. Water treatment plants, power grids, hospitals. Disrupting those can cause real physical harm, injury, even death. There's also psychological harm for individuals whose private info gets leaked, and massive reputational damage for the company that got breached.
And the biggest societal risks seem tied to that critical infrastructure point.
Definitely. That's where vulnerability meets vital services. Power, water, finance, healthcare, they all run on these complex cyber-physical systems now. While organized crime is behind most data breaches, like 55%, often going after consumer data for fraud.
Like identity theft, credit card scams.
Right. But attacks on infrastructure, even if less common, have the potential for the most widespread harm.
And we saw that play out with the Colonial Pipeline attack, didn't we?
Perfect example. The ransomware didn't necessarily break the pipeline itself, but it shut down the billing and management systems. The company couldn't operate it safely or effectively.
And the result was?
Panic buying, gas stations running out of fuel all up the U.S. East Coast, massive disruption, huge economic ripples, just because a key system became unavailable. It shows how dependent we are.
What's really unnerving, though, is how long attackers can apparently operate undetected.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a figure in the research. The average time to even discover a breach is something like 197 days.
Yeah, that's the average, almost 7 months.
7 months. They could be doing anything in that time.
Absolutely. And that detection time varies. Attacks trying to steal data quietly, confidentiality, are often harder to spot than something like a DDoS attack availability, which is immediately obvious because the service goes down.
So spies are sneakier than vandals, basically.
You could put it that way. State actors, especially, want to stay hidden to keep using their valuable tools, like zero days.
So, okay, eventually the alarm bells ring. The company realizes they've been hit. What happens then? What's the response process?
It usually starts with detection confirmation using security tools, looking for those indicators of compromise, the digital fingerprints of the attack. Then immediately, evidence collection.
Why evidence first?
Because some digital evidence is volatile. It disappears quickly if systems are shut down or rebooted. And you need a clean chain of custody if there's any hope of prosecution later.
Right, for legal reasons.
Exactly. Then comes the huge task of recovery.
Containing the damage and cleaning up.
Yeah. Isolating affected systems, maybe shutting parts down, patching the vulnerability they used, often rebuilding servers or workstations from scratch. And the really hard part, making absolutely sure all the malware is gone, all the back doors are closed.
Sounds like a nightmare. Now, one of the biggest frustrations must be figuring out who did it. Attribution.
Oh, it's incredibly difficult. Attackers use proxy servers, stolen accounts, route traffic through multiple countries. It's designed to obscure their origin.
Easy to hide online.
Very. And companies are often less interested in who did it than just getting back online. Law enforcement and intelligence agencies care more, but it's tough. Plus, you have the problem of false flag attacks.
Where they deliberately make it look like someone else was responsible.
Exactly. Planting digital clues that point to a rival nation or group. It makes attribution even harder and riskier.
High-tech deception. So what about the law? Are these actions actually illegal?
Oh, yes. Cyber attacks generally fall under national cybercrime laws. If they happen in a conflict situation, international law applies. They could be violations of sovereignty or even war crimes if they target critical civilian infrastructure deliberately.
And companies face legal issues, too.
Yes, especially now with data breach notification laws in many places. If customer data is compromised, companies often have a legal duty to inform those affected. Failure to do so brings its own penalties.
So we've gone from the basic definition, that CIA triad, through the sheer scale, the kill chain, the rise of cybercrime as a service, and the long delays in detection. It feels like the big takeaway, running through all the research, is this move away from seeking perfect security.
Which seems impossible.
Towards building resilience, being able to function despite being compromised.
That really seems to be the key message. And maybe that leads us to a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on.
Okay.
Given how hard attribution is, how difficult prosecution can be, and the fact that often the biggest costs of a breach harm to consumers, the disruption aren't fully borne by the company whose security failed. They're sort of externalities.
Right. Society pays part of the price.
Does the current system actually create strong enough incentives for companies to invest deeply in prevention? Or, realistically, is widespread adoption of cyber resilience focusing on limiting the damage rather than perfect prevention simply the only practical way forward in our complex, interconnected world?
A tough question. Is resilience the only answer? Because prevention is just too hard or too expensive under the current rules. Something definitely to think about.